At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
A warm and friendly hello, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Pierce, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and got a great podcast for you. It's in the second segment. We are going to be joined by Ben Wilson. He does a terrific job over there with the VSiN Bet Center, a man that does lots of play-by-play, whether it be college basketball, whether it be baseball, whether it be indoor football. He does it also. In the second segment, we're going to be joined by him talking about our takeaways from the first week of the NCAA tournament, turning it forward to the Sweet 16 games, the importance of defense when it comes to handicapping these games in the NCAA tournament, and going to get his thoughts on a couple NIT games as well. So going to have some fun there. And then in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. First things first, always do love to be able to answer Twitter questions on this podcast. You've got one of two ways we'll fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at @GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM. Name does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Really didn't get in any questions today, and we had a light slate of basketball Monday, but we still wound up having a few games that wound up giving us the CBI semifinal that we're going to be seeing on Tuesday. So let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
If you wound up taking Drake on the money line, boy, it was chalky, and boy, was this a bad beat. Drake was up 64-45 with 11 minutes remaining, and then I'm melting. They blow a 19-point lead, and they wind up losing 76-75 as they close out the year 12-21 against the spread. And if you're looking at the flip side, UNC Wilmington, all the credit in the world to them. They had the best against the spread record in conference of any team in all of college basketball. After starting out 3-5, here they are with a 25-win season at 25-9. So what that means is that they've won 22 out of their last 26 games. So UNC Wilmington gets the job done. Northern Colorado, they fall down by double digits. I had a few people freak out on social media because I wound up having a nice edge here on Northern Colorado, but they get the job done by a count of 87-84 as they close out the game on an 8-2 run. Dallin Counts, well, he made them all counts in this one. He winds up giving you 29 points, 6 assists, a Northern Colorado team that's in the top 30 in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and also in the bottom 30 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Drew Pember, one of the better shot blockers in all of college basketball, 24 points, 10 boards, 2 blocks, but for UNC Asheville, a little bit of an underachieving year winds up coming to an end, despite them going 7 of 18 from 3 and turning the ball over just 4 times, because Northern Colorado, they go 14 of 31 from three-point range with Drew Cooks out in a cooking. 18 points on 5 of 9 three-point shooting. Despite Josh Jefferson not being in the fold, Middle Tennessee able to not just get the job done, but they wind up being able to get the job done in very convincing fashion over Boston U by a count of 76-46. This is a Boston U team that I was quite honestly expecting more from, and they weren't able to live up to their billing. And for Middle Tennessee, they continue to be the best against the spread team in all of college basketball, advancing their ATS record to 25-7-1. That's 78.1% their kids, as they wound up in this one going 10-24 from 3-point range. Boston U, Well, they shot 32% from the floor, went 5 of 25 from three-point range, and they actually won the rebound battle by a count of 31-29, but that's about all they won in this one, as getting the job done for Middle Tennessee. How about 12 points, 6 boards out of DeAndre Dishman, a result in which it was a whole greater than the sum of its parts win, with Middle Tennessee only committing 7 turnovers despite Josh Jefferson, top scorer, not playing in this game. And then the nightcap in the CBI, Abilene Christian, they wind up taking down Ohio in a game that featured 112 points in the second half. If you were on the over in this one, it was very, very glorious. 91-86 was the final in this one, as you wound up getting, and I'm not even kidding, your 29 points in the final 2 minutes of this game. So if you wound up having any sort of an alternative over, you were probably thrilled about that. Abilene Christian, 25 of 29 at the free throw line, 8 of 18 from 3-point range. Corian Mason, Arion Simmons, they combined to be able to give you 38 points in this contest. Ohio wins a rebound battle by a count of 34-29. They also wound up having both Ben Roderick and Ben Vanderplas fall out of this game. Vanderplas, 21 points, 11 rebounds. And Mark Sears, if he winds up coming back to Ohio, take note of him, 35 points, 7 boards out of him. But Ohio, not enough to be able to get the job done. And then the Basketball Classic had a pair of games. Florida Gulf Coast, they had fired their coach Michael Fly before this, and well, they wound up melting down in the second half, 84-68 the final, after they were up in this game, 40-34 at the half. And from there, it was just a big giant meltdown, as Rudy was the man that wound up helping out Coastal Carolina in this one. Rudy Williams, 24 points. He goes 4 of 8 from 3-point range. Isam Mustafa, 23 points, 14 rebounds. Coastal Carolina wins the rebound battle by a count of 46-31, and they continue to be a top 25 team in all of college basketball. An opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, Dunk City, 11 of 34 from distance in this one. Tavion Dunn-Martin chips in their 17 points, but their run is now over. And if you want to take the DK Nation pick, the over in South Alabama along with South Carolina upstate gets there with ease. 83-79, South Alabama, the win but no cover, as they wound up melting down in this one after they were up big time. It looked like they were going to be off to a little bit of a cruiser of a cover, as they wind up being able to take a 56-39 lead, and then you wound up having South Carolina upstate actually make this a 1-point game with about 5 minutes remaining, because they were able to do a solid job at the charity stripe. 24 of 27, with Bryson Mazzone being in the zone for 29 points. Interesting South Carolina upstate team. If they wind up returning a lot of their pieces, they could be solid out there in the Big South. And for South Alabama, they were without J.J. Chandler once again in this game, really one of their top scorers, but they did wind up having Javon Franklin out there, 28 points, and their leading scorer, Charles Manning, left after 8 minutes in this game. So it's important to note moving forward, you want to be checking in on his status, because that's a little bit of an ailment. And take a look at what we wound up getting from these lesser tournaments. You wound up having 5 overs and 1 under, so that really speaks to what we're getting out there. If you count Northern Colorado as an underdog, because they were alternating between a pick'em, they were a very, very slight favorite in some spots, they were a very slight underdog in others. So if you wind up counting them as an underdog in this game, you wind up having underdogs actually have yourself a relatively solid day, as they wind up going 4-2 against the spread. So that's what we wind up seeing in college basketball Monday. Now let's turn the page forward, take a look at the NCAA Tournament Sweet 16, and what we all wound up seeing in the first week of the NCAA Tournament with our good friend Ben Wilson of VSiN. That's up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig E. Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig Epstein, and now part of the VSiN Family of Podcasts. And it is great to be joined by our guest, as Ben Wilson does absolutely amazing work over at the Vegas Ads and Information Network. On weekends, you're able to catch him doing the VSiN Bet Center. He does that with Jeff Parles, another good buddy of ours. He does a little bit of everything. This is a man that you're able to catch him doing a lot of play-by-play, ESPN Plus. You saw him doing some college basketball games for the Pac-12 on Fox this season as well. He's over there at Stadium. So this man does a little bit of everything. And he, much like myself, began his life out there in the great state of Wisconsin. As we've got Ben Wilson on the podcast, to be able to follow him on Twitter, as at Ben_Wilson_, and then the number 1. And Ben, it is great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. As always, yes, I make it hard for people to find me on the old social media with all those underscores. Our Wisconsinite nature here, I will say that Wisconsin-Iowa State game took about 8 years off my life. I feel very idiotic having Wisconsin in my Final Four. It was not a homer pick, Greg. That was basically an FU to the region of my bracket there. Fortunately, I had Wisconsin +6 in game, which was was way too much of a sweat, but what an ugly display of basketball, which really dampened what was otherwise just a tremendous weekend of hoops here. So glad to be on as always.
Yeah, New Mexico State's ugly 13-point first half. That was not necessarily one that we're going to be putting in the pantheon of great offensive performances. Maybe defensive performances, but certainly not offensive performances. And what has been your takeaway from the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament? Because I think the biggest thing for me is that defense still wins championships in college basketball. You just mentioned it with the Wisconsin Badgers. They went up against the Cyclones team that, boy, they weren't necessarily putting the ball in the basket themselves. And I would say that it's a little bit more than just the defense as to why Wisconsin was 1 of 21 from three-point range prior to that last three-pointer that Jordan Davis put in with 10 seconds remaining when it was too late. But I think that a big thing for me is that it shows that defense is just still so critical in the tournament.
Yeah, and I would add on to that, certainly, I mean, a big takeaway for me as well, Greg. Also, the fact that even if you went through most of the season not really trying or not really caring on the defensive end, we have seen in this tournament, and to me, Miami is the best example of this, where the ability to buy in or just the general team sense of realizing the urgent nature of the NCAA tournament, for a lot of these teams, like, there is a path forward to simply just trying harder on defense and resulting in better success. I think there's sometimes this misnomer of, yeah, like these guys just schematically, they're not able to pick up things for whatever reason. They aren't able to find success the same way on the defensive end as the offensive end. I thought it was pretty blatant watching a lot of these teams this week. A team like Miami, who was outside the top 150 in KenPom's adjusted defensive efficiency all year, they turned USC over approximately a billion times in the first round game and were just tremendous for 40 minutes. What they did against Auburn, their guards, when you consider that they'll have a guy, Jabari Smith, probably a potential number one overall pick in the NBA draft next year. To see the way that team grouped together under a great head coach, as we know, with Final Four experience and Jim Larrañaga, but to just overcome so many of their deficiencies they'd shown in the regular season on offense and win with the biggest perceived weakness on their team, those are the type of examples that I look at and say, to me, like, the teams that are dangerous are the ones that actually have really, really hyper efficiencies on offense, but at the same time, might have been underperforming defensively, but are at least showing you signs. And there are a couple of spots where we have seen that. One glaring obvious where that has not taken place of a team that has still advanced is Duke. Because, I mean, think about it, Greg. If that Duke team decided they wanted to care at all or try about playing defense, they would have a lot more success. And essentially, they're winning just because it's a NBA style. We're just going to play street ball for 40 minutes and see what happens. So I would be a lot more bullish on Duke had I seen just anything, Greg. Any sort of glimpse of defensive prowess in the first two rounds, I did not. And as a result, I'm looking more on the Texas Tech side. I'm going to be backing the Red Raiders come this weekend.
And I think that you bring up something very fascinating with that as well, as we do have Ben Wilson joining me on the podcast. All the teams that are remaining in the NCAA tournament, they really don't turn the ball over either. That is the one forte that you've got with Miami. Fewer than 10 turnovers per contest. Very efficient on the offensive side of things. You just take a look at it. All the teams are playing on Thursday. Houston, Arizona, Duke, Texas Tech, Michigan, Villanova, and then you've got Gonzaga and Arkansas. I think the team with the most turnovers per game is Texas Tech, and I'd like to say that they're somewhere in the neighborhood of about 13.5-ish turnovers per game. They're the real outlier, but they're also number one in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis away from home, and I think that that's very important as well. Playing solid defense and not shooting yourself in the foot with regards to all these possessions. You don't necessarily need to bury like 40% of your threes, but you just need to be able to get clean looks and give yourself a chance to get points. And when you turn the ball over, you don't do that.
Right. Well, you know what's funny too about Texas Tech? My largest future of the first weekend was a Texas Tech bet to make the Sweet 16, which is certainly not sexy in any way. Had a pretty good number at under minus 200 out here at Greg at one of the books in Nevada. Just felt like that was tremendous value. Was seeing it closer to like minus 300 on the East Coast. And watching Texas Tech, it's funny. I almost got the sense that they knew they were so good on defense and enjoyed playing defense so much that they almost felt obligated to just punt on every other possession against Notre Dame just to make the game more competitive. Maybe that's just my cynicism coming through watching that game and having a bet on them. But like, I really felt like Texas Tech was just such leaps and bounds better defensively than anything anybody could possibly throw at them on the offensive end. And you just saw Notre Dame. It was such a struggle. But at the same time, their lack of efficiency on offense was the, and you mentioned the turnovers, and they had so many lackadaisical possessions. That was the one thing that kept that game close. I have to imagine, and like I said, like Texas Tech going forward, I really wonder about Duke's ability to compete with them on their offensive end, where you've got this lockdown, just grind you down sort of defense. It's really a question of what it comes down to is, can they actually protect the ball consistently, understanding that Duke can create a ton of offense with careless turnovers if you give them to them. That was the one thing I noticed with Texas Tech, because a lot of people, I know Greg discussed this, how a very potent team Texas Tech is to potentially make a deep run. That is the one thing they're going to have to clean up. I certainly think they have the tools to beat Duke, certainly beat Gonzaga, but I mean, if they continue to play like that offensively, I don't know. It's going to be a hard path for me to see them beating both of those teams next weekend in that regional final round.
Yeah, I do think that that's going to be really interesting to take a look at. And really, all these regions have sort of their own, I guess you call it idiosyncrasies, as we do with Ben Wilson joining me on the podcast, because obviously you've got the Peacocks of St. Peter's who somehow, some way, have been able to advance to the Sweet 16. And if I'm looking for a team that's outside of a three to be able to make the Final Four, I think that things have shaped up really well for UCLA. I talk about our defense has been so big in the NCAA tournament. They now draw a North Carolina team that they are one of the lesser teams in terms of defense in the NCAA tournament. It's been a little bit better here, but certainly team that I'm still not trusting in with that regard. You want to be checking in on the injury to Jaime Jaquez, no question. But I take a look at UCLA. I wound up picking them in my Final Four before we wound up having the NCAA tournament go down. And I still feel very good about them being able to make that run and perhaps be able to make a national championship if things break right as well.
Yeah, what's funny, Greg, I have UCLA as well in a Final Four on my bracket. The game I was worried about the most was St. Mary's. And what you saw with the St. Mary's team that I've been so impressed by all season, as we know, beat Gonzaga handily at home in the regular season, had some really, really good wins. But UCLA showed after just a dismal performance against Akron, where they were really, really lucky to win that game Thursday night. But what they showed against St. Mary's is they were essentially just a better version. I would argue Randy Bennett's best team he has had in Moraga, even better than the Elevadova, Omar Samhan Sweet 16 team from years past, about a little over a decade ago. And to me now, I'll say this on Jaquez, it seemed like he left about 5 or 6 games of the season, Greg, with what has appeared to be these rough and tumble type injuries, only to then return the next game and look totally fine. So maybe that's just optimism on my end, because I have the Final Four future on them. Would imagine that will be something that, at least for Mick Cronin, trying to game plan. Like, I expect him to be fine. And that game Saturday was a total microcosm of what you are investing in with UCLA, where they had all 5 starters score at least 9 points. Everybody was solid. Jules Bernard went from being basically unplayable Thursday night against Akron to one of the better guys on the floor in a matchup of your 10 starting guys combined between both teams were like really, really good guys between St. Mary's and UCLA. So based on the ball distribution, based on the discipline, the coaching, the experience, and you factor in how good they are on the defensive end, I have to imagine this is going to be a tough slog for North Carolina, even though, I mean, throw the seeding aside. They're not an 8-seed North Carolina. They underachieved all year. Have obviously played their best basketball at the right time. It is going to be a money line play for me on UCLA. Like you said, I'm just waiting to see what the status of Jaquez is. I might be a little less confident, would sort of lay off if they actually do rule him out. But everything I've seen so far, Greg, would lean to certainly be seeing him in the lineup that Sweet 16 game. And that is a matchup I do like for the Bruins.
And I do think that when it comes to the NCAA tournament, with a lot of these teams, I didn't necessarily sour on them too much from what I wound up thinking prior to the NCAA tournament of the teams that wound up advancing. The one team that does stand out to me, though, a little bit, that'd be Arizona, because Kirk Carissa wound up getting back out there on the floor on Sunday against TCU, and you could see it. He just did not look 100%. Now, apparently his plus-minus was something like 20, which, if you're ever looking for a more misleading plus-minus, I mean, there you go right there, because Kirk Carissa looked absolutely terrible. He should not have been out there on the court. That was just not good to say the least, but now they've got a Sweet 16 matchup against Houston. If Carissa does wind up going in this game, which if he wound up playing in the round of 32, you got to think that he's going to be going here. Got to think that he's going to be a little bit closer to 100%, but I think that this might be the trickiest game to a handicap in the tournament, because Houston, they've got all these tremendous metrics. Their win against Illinois might actually be their best win of the season in terms of the competition that they wound up playing. Meanwhile, Arizona, they've been a fireball on offense with or without Kirk Carissa, but I think that you now have a couple question marks with regards to this defense as well.
Oh, no question. Greg, had Tommy Lloyd put you in for the same exact number of minutes that Kirk Carissa was put in, I think you would have had a plus 20 in that game. He did absolutely nothing. Unfortunately, like I invested in Arizona, that's my national champion pick in the bracket. I've got a future on them to make the Elite Eight at basically even money, which the value on that now is totally gone since they're, you know, just a shade above a pick'em against Houston and had a monster scare on Sunday night against TCU. The biggest worry I have for them now, and it's part of what you just discussed, it's not just the injury to Carissa, it's more what Tommy Lloyd did with his rotations, which coming into the tournament, the whole narrative was, for people who were not going to pick Arizona, was, okay, they pass every possible test metrically, eye test, their talent on both sides of the ball. However, they have a coach who's in his first year, has no head coaching NCAA tournament experience, so you just can't rely on that. And I just kind of felt like in today's day and age of 2022 college basketball, kind of a ridiculous narrative to still, you know, be ruling out national champion potentials because of. So I went with Arizona, felt like they were the best overall team in the field. And of course, we make that decision. And then Tommy Lloyd has looked, at least on Sunday night, looked completely unprepared for that moment. It was a total panic job by that team down the stretch. They really made no adjustments against the interior physical size of TCU. And that's the one thing, if you go back to, because I had Colorado earlier this year, Greg, back when they were, I mean, super banged up and battered, and they played Arizona shortly after the game I had of theirs. And the Buffs, like, they beat up Arizona inside, and they got really physical with them. It reminded me a lot of, in the end, of what we saw in the TCU game, where Arizona, despite all the success of Christian Coloco inside, they just didn't really have an answer on the defensive end. And if shots weren't falling from the outside, they were screwed, and they lost that game going away to Colorado. I kind of looked at that game as one of those spots of thinking going forward, all right, this is the type of moment and the type of game that, for Tommy Lloyd, can learn a lot from, and his players can learn a lot from as well. We didn't really see that play out Sunday night. And now you go, you know, here right into a Houston team who's a top five metrically in defense, very slow tempo team. While I didn't like their prospects coming in because of the lack of experience with how many guys they had banged up, the line to me is right, Greg. It should be about a pick 'em. I will not have a play on this game. I'm just going to ride out my Arizona future, hope for the best. But big reasons, I would say, to be concerned out of Arizona here going into the round of 16.
Going to be just so interesting to take a look at that game. You've got so many headlines surrounding that one. What do we wind up getting out of both of those teams? It is going to be a fun one, as we do have Ben Wilson of VSiN joining me on the podcast. And Ben, we don't have any NCAA tournament games that are going to be going down until Thursday, but we've got the NIT, we've got the CBI, we've got the Basketball Classic as well, so we've got all these smaller tournaments. Is there anything that you're taking a look at with regards to any of these for Tuesday or Wednesday? Because certainly not necessarily the most rambunctious games, but it doesn't matter if you're betting on the Final Four or if you're betting on, like I wound up giving out, Portland versus New Orleans a couple days ago. Money is money. So is there anything that you're taking a look at for the next few days?
Yeah, I would look towards the Wednesday card with Washington State, a team I really liked. I had one of their games back in January, and they were one of the most injured, banged up, COVID-riddled teams in the country. Kyle Smith has done there. It's been very impressive turning around that program to, at least this is, I believe, the second straight year they've been in some sort of postseason competition. And that was one of those dark horse teams I really liked originally to make a run to the NIT, and they went to SMU on Sunday. It just, I mean, that thing was just a bulldozing of the Mustangs. So a team that's really solid, you know, I would say, 2-3 too many losses early on in Pac-12 play when that roster was still kind of a jumbled mess. But going up against the BYU, like a really interesting matchup. I'm curious what line we end up getting on that game. And think about like the guys they have inside with F.A. Abugidi. I got to watch actually 3 years ago at the NBA Global Academy Showcase in Vegas. Interestingly enough, Abugidi played on the same team as Benedict Mathurin. So very timely and interesting to have seen those guys then now into this year's tournament. But Wazoo's a team I've really liked. Their issue has been Noah Williams. He took a huge step back this year. He had some off-the-court issues, was arrested back in the preseason, banged up as well. With him dominating the ball a lot, a lot of inconsistencies relying on him. But they have a lot of other good pieces I was super impressed with when I had a chance to watch them. And Abugidi is one of my favorite big men I watched in person calling games with all year. So that's a team with the NIT in any of these smaller tournaments, as we know. So much of the handicap is motivation. And for a program like Wazoo, sometimes we just sort of write off these Power 5 teams because it's like, they don't really care. It's a Power 5. It's tournament or bust. But for them, that's a team that is in Pullman. I mean, it's a big rebuild. They're trying to get back to relevance in the Pac-12. And this is a great opportunity to do so. Kyle Smith, I mean, a really solid, a stock rising type young coach. This is a perfect type of event for them to showcase that. And they certainly look dialed in their last game as well.
Yeah, with Washington State, they were a team that I thought had a chance to be able to make strides to the NCAA tournament. Just a case in which it felt like the offense was a little bit stagnant from time to time. Muhammad Gay had been dealing with a couple of injuries as well. Looks like he's getting closer and closer to being 100%. And then my guy, Andre Yagbovsky, is someone that when he winds up getting minutes, good things seem to wind up happening for Washington State. So I think that game between they and BYU is going to be really interesting. And Ben, I know you're just dialed into a little bit of everything. And one of our favorite sports, baseball, is going to be coming up in the next few weeks. I know that you are very much getting hyped up for that. I know that you're doing a great job tracking everything in college basketball as well. And I know that you're going to be getting into a little bit of a busy time yourself because you're going to be doing a lot of spring sports with regards to play-by-play. So love to give people at home know how they're able to follow you on Twitter and just everything that you've got going on in general.
It's funny. We're doing play-by-play for the expansion Vegas Nighthawks of the Indoor Football League. So we somehow have football also going on, Greg, which is kind of weird. But yeah, we just had our first broadcast last weekend, a 16-week season in week two. So just starting on that, which should be a blast. But yeah, I'm at Ben_Wilson_1. If you make the effort to put in the two underscores, I can't say you'll be rewarded with great content, but you'll at least have found me. So that's my plea there to get the followers on the old Twitter machine, Greg.
The old Vegas Nighthawks who play at the Dollar Loan Center, which I live like 5 miles away from. So it's going to be very, very fascinating to see what we wind up getting there. As, hey, the Dollar Loan Center is getting a lot of run. That's where they wound up having the Big West tournament at.
So yeah, Big West.
I'm excited to having some sports out here in my backyard that perhaps I can be able to go and watch. And Ben, I know he's doing absolutely amazing job with a wide variety of things and always brings it whenever he's on this podcast. So big thanks to Ben for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops-Pierce, and now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. It is always a pleasure to get Ben Wilson of VSiN on here. He does absolutely amazing work with regards to VSiN Bet Center on weekends. You are also able to find him doing lots of play-by-play work, as you heard, doing everything from college basketball to indoor football. So the man does it all and does so very well. So big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at GUnit_81. As per usual, we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is going to start out with the two NIT games. As of right now, we don't have any numbers up in the CBI, but those are going to be up next because these teams wound up playing yesterday to be able to survive in advance. And then we've got a sizzler between UTEP and Southern Utah in the College Basketball Classic. So we're going with those five games in order. And this begins with 6:09. 6:10 on the betting board, the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure are going to be taking on Virginia. Virginia is finding themselves anywhere between a 3 and 3.5 point favorite, and your total is anywhere between 125 at 125.5. And when it comes to this spot, I do think that it's going to be a low-scoring game. I did wind up setting my total at a 123.5. Certainly, this is not the Virginia defense of old, but with that said, this is the style of old with regards to Virginia. As with regards to total possessions per game, they are still dead last in all of college basketball, and this is still a St. Bonaventure team that they rank in the bottom 100 with regards to total possessions per game. You do have a pair of solid big men that are going to be going at it in this game as well, as you've got Jaden Gardner, who's been able to give this Virginia team right in the neighborhood of 7 rebounds per game, and is helped out by Caden Chatterick, who's able to give you right around 2 blocks per contest. Gardner is able to give you 15.5 points per contest, and Oshuni, he's a solid scorer, 11.5 points per contest, but what he really does is protect the rim. He's able to give you 3 blocks. He's able to do a solid job of being able to pull in their 7.5 rebounds per game. So I do like his overall game, and has had 3-plus blocks in 4 of the team's last 5 contests. You do take a look at the St. Bonaventure team, and they've been able to do a better job on defense recently. They have given up 68 points or fewer in each of their last 4 games. Virginia wound up getting pushed to overtime against North Texas, but if you take a look at regulation and regulation only, because North Texas, in regulation, they wound up getting to 55 points. They have now given up 63 points or fewer in now each out of their 5 games here in the month of March, and really going back the last time they wound up giving up more than 65 points in a contest, you have to go back to when they wound up playing against Miami. So 65 points or fewer now given up in 9 out of their last 10 games. So this Virginia defense starting to fire on all cylinders. I do like the backcourt of this Virginia team, as well as you've been able to get some good play out of Reese Beekman along with Kia Clark. Both of these guys are able to shoot in the mid-30s from 3-point range. They combine to be able to give you 9.5 assists per game, 18.5 points per game, and Virginia, they're a team that you're able to trust in at the free throw line. 74% at the charity stripe. Both of these teams do a good job of not turning the ball over. Virginia, 9.8 turnovers per game. Meanwhile, you've got the Bonnies, who have right around 10.5 turnovers per game. Jalen Attaway has really been able to headline the team with 16 points, 6 boards, shoots 39% from 3. Really, other than Dominic Welsh, who shoots 36.5% from 3, nobody else on this team shoots above really 32-ish% from 3-point range. Ron Holmes, Kyle Lofton, they do a good job of being able to dole out the ball. Lofton, 5.5 assists, 13 points per contest, and Holmes, 13.5 points. 3.5 assists. So I do like what these guys are able to bring to the table, but I think that things are going to be relatively buttoned up. I think that Virginia, they're coming of age on defense, to say the least, and the fact that you've got Tony Bennett, just the ultimate coach of coach, who is able to get his teams motivated regardless of the situation, is going to be able to help out Virginia in this spot. I said Virginia is a 3.5 point favorite, so I'm looking to lay a 3 here. At 3.5, I would still be looking to lay it with Virginia before taking it with St. Bonaventure, just because I do think that there is a coaching edge with Virginia. So want to lay the points, semi-total at a 123.5 as well, so going to be diving under. 6-11, 6-12 is the other NIT game, and also the DK Nation pick. Vanderbilt is going to be hitting the road faceoff against Xavier. Xavier is anywhere between a 3.5 and a 4-point favorite, and your total on this game, you're going to be finding it anywhere between a 142.5 and a 144. This opened up at 144. We're starting to see it dip, and I do agree with this line move. I set my total at a 141, so I'm looking under. That is not necessarily the DK Nation pick here. DK Nation pick is Vanderbilt. I think that we've got to be taking a look at this Vanderbilt team a little bit differently right now. I want to send them as a 1-point favorite because two of their current starters, Liam Robbins along Dayton transfer Ronnie Chapman, both of these guys miss over half the season. They wound up missing a combined 37 games throughout the season. Liam Robbins is a guy that's 7 feet tall, comes in from Minnesota, is able to shoot threes, and has been able to give the team 2 blocks per contest. Ronnie Chapman, able to give you 8.5 points, shoots 39% from three-point range, and then you've got a Vanderbilt team that is headlined by Scottie Pippen Jr. in the top 20 among all college basketball players with regards to points per game, so he's really going to be the best scorer out there on the floor, and the only player in all of college basketball averaging more than 8 free throw attempts per contest. This is a Xavier team that they've had a little bit of a tough time keeping teams off the free throw line recently. They've been having a little bit of lack of discipline because they wound up canning Travis Steele, and now they do wind up having their man in Mr. Sean Miller back in full, but he's not going to be coaching this game. It's still the interim coaching regime, which means that you've got Jack Donge out there, and to the credit of Xavier, a lot of the guys that wound up being on the roster to begin the year, they have not opted out of the season, so you've got a relatively full roster here for Xavier, despite everything that's gone on. Nunge is able to give you 13.5 points, 7.5 boards, does shoot 36% from three-point range, but among your top five scores, three of them shoot below 31% from three-point range. You've got Paul Scruggs, who, well, he has been able to give the team right around 12 points, 4 assists per game. He does give you a seal and apricot test as well, but as we know, you wound up having his fouling issues towards the back half of the Big East tournament. You've got Nate Johnson, who's been able to give you 10.5 points, shooting 38% from three-point range, but he's been banged up throughout the season, had 16 points in their last contest against Florida, but really past that, he's not been able to do a ton for this team with all of his ailments. Adam Kunkel has been all over the place, guy that's been able to give you 8.5 points per contest, but at home only shoots right around 33% from three-point range, has been relatively inconsistent recently in the last 5 games, 0, 12, 3, 14, and 5 points, so it is a case in which you don't know what to expect out of him. He's been getting into a lot of foul trouble, so I do think that there's your issues there, and then you've got Miles Sute on the other side for Vanderbilt, 8.5 points, shoots 42.5% from three, and I really like what I've seen out of Jordan Wright as well, a 6'6" combo player, giving 12.5 points, 6.5 boards, shooting 35.5% from 3-point range, has put up at least 13 points in 3 out of the last 4 contests, 6-plus rebounds in each out of the last 6 games as well. This guy has been a dominator down low, and I think that Vanderbilt going to be able to do a good job down low. Xavier outside the top 75 in regards to both points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis, so I do think the Vanderbilt, with Xavier just being in all sorts of flux, they are going to be able to get the job done because I think that they are going to be a little bit more motivated in this spot. I made Vanderbilt a 1-point favorite, so in my DK Nation pick, it's going to be me taking the points with Vanderbilt. I personally am going to be taking a look at the money line, and with my total, set it at a 141, so looking under, and once again, DK Nation pick, Vanderbilt. 613, 614 is part of the CBI, UNC Wilmington and Northern Colorado. At the time of this broadcast, we've got no numbers currently up on this game, but I want to make it a little bit of a handicap, and I made UNC Wilmington at a 2-point favorite. I really like what I've seen out of this UNC Wilmington team. Also set my total at 152. We'll dive into the bad defense of Northern Colorado in a second, but when it comes to UNC Wilmington, a team that wanted starting out 3-5 this season, and now they've been able to win 22 out of their last 26 games. If you're looking for a team that has really come of age, they have really been able to do so. They've got a Northern Colorado team that, with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis, they're in the bottom 35 in all of college basketball. In terms of points scored on a per possession basis, they're in the top 35 in all of college basketball. So that sort of speaks to where they are with that regard. You've got a Northern Colorado team that you take a look at them, and Out of 358 D1 teams, they are 343rd with regards to opponents' three-point shooting percentage at 343rd. So, has not necessarily been too terrific. And, I mean, they allowed opponents to shoot 43.5% from three-point range at home. That was the worst mark in all of college basketball. UNC Wilmington, it's not like they're necessarily going to completely bear down on defense or anything like that, but, I mean, they're more of a league average team with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis. Among your 358 D1 teams, they find themselves in the mid-100s. So, they certainly have been able to do far from a bad job there. And with UNC Wilmington, they're a team that they do a nice job of being able to take care of the ball, a bunch of which only turns the ball over right around 10.5 times per contest. This is a Northern Colorado team that is one of the worst in all of college basketball being able to generate turnovers, so that is certainly working to their disadvantage. And then you take a look at what you're also able to get on this UNC Wilmington team, and I think that you've got the most complete player out there in Jalen Sims. Not the best scorer, because on the flip side, you've got Dallin Counts, who's able to give you 21 points, 4 boards. He shoots 41% for 3. Drew Cookshausen actually led all of college basketball in terms of total 3-point shots made. But you take a look at Sims, guy that's able to give you right around 16 points. He chips in there 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game. He's able to do a good job of being able to pickpocket as well. Guy that's able to give you a little bit over a steal per contest. You take a look at this UNC Wilmington team as a whole. They shoot right around 33% from three-point range. They shoot 72-73% at the charity stripe. Michael Kuru, Shaquem Phillips, they've been able to combine for 24.5 points, 7.5 boards. Both guys give you a little bit over a steal and a half and a 2.5 assists per game. Both guys shoot right around 35% from three, so got some good balance there. Lone issue you have with UNC Wilmington is that Tarzarian White, guy that's been able to give you 7 points, right around 5 rebounds per game, he has not taken part in the CBI. Meanwhile, for Northern Colorado, Kerr Junkic has been able to do a good job down low. He's averaging 8.5 rebounds. He's able to give you 9 points per contest, so that is something that is a little bit more heartening for this Northern Colorado team. But outside of him, you do have Bodie Hume, 11 points, 6 boards, relatively well-rounded player. And with your top 3 scorers for Northern Colorado, they shoot at least 41% from 3-point range, so they've all been able to do a rock solid job there. But you do take a look at this UNC Wilmington team. They've done a relatively solid job with regards to being able to guard inside. 3-point line is a little bit of a liability, but they do a nice job of being able to slow down games outside the top 250 with regards to possessions per game. I do think that they're going to get a little bit more of a control game in this one. With having White out of the fold, I think that they're going to do a better job of actually being able to guard on the perimeter as well. And with Northern Colorado, just a team that they're not playing a lot of defense either. So even though the game is going to be slowed down, I did wind up setting my total at a 152. And with Northern Colorado, just cannot trust in their defense, I'm willing to take UNC Wilmington in the spot and made them a 2-point favorite. 615-616 is the other game. Once again, no numbers up on this one. Middle Tennessee and Abilene Christian. I said Abilene Christian a 2.5-point favorite in your total 146.5. You've got a Middle Tennessee team that they have been the best cover team in all of college basketball. You've got to give them all the credit in the world for this, but they are going to be without their top scorer once again in Josh Jefferson. Now, they have been able to persevere without him. To their credit, they wound up getting the job done against Boston U in very convincing fashion yesterday to be able to extend their best cover rate in all of college basketball. They're covering right around 75 to 80% of their games, depending on your closing numbers. And for Middle Tennessee, the guy that's really stepping up for the team, Sonovan Sims, wound up having 13 points, 6 boards in the game yesterday. And you take a look at him overall, shoots in the mid-30s for 3-point range, but 89% the free throwing, chips in there 11 points, 4.5 rebounds. The big liability that you've got with Middle Tennessee is that they just don't necessarily do a great job on the glass. Now, you do have a trio of guys that give you between 4.3 and 5 rebounds per game, DeAndre Dishman, Eli Lawrence, and then I mentioned it with Sims, Lawrence and Dishman combined to be able to give you right around 20.5 points per contest. Lawrence shoots right around 34% per 3-point range at Middle Tennessee. They don't really have a single guy on the roster that shoots above 34.5% from 3-point range, and that'd be Tyler Millen, who has been able to give you right around 4.5 points per contest, has been seeing a few more minutes here in the CBI, but has been a guy that has been very hit or miss, has now scored 7 points of fear in each of the last 6 contests, so that's a little bit of an issue there. You've got Cameron Weston, who's been able to dole out the ball, being able to give you right around 2.5 assists per game. And Middle Tennessee, to their credit, they do generate 8 steals per game, but this is an Abilene Christian team that, if you want a team that swarms, you want a team that generates turnovers, that's them. They get a turnover on nearly 28% of possessions as number one in all of college basketball. This is a Middle Tennessee team that they rank right around 100th with regards to possessions per game, but they do turn the ball over right around 13-ish times per contest, so that I think is going to nip them in the butt. And you've got an Abilene Christian team that they do a good job of being able to play by committee. They're not necessarily a great 3-point shooting team, much like Middle Tennessee, right around 31.5% from distance, but they shoot 75% at the free throw line among your top 6 scores. You've got five of them shooting at least 74.9% at the free throw line. I like what I've seen out of Arian Simmons coupled with Corian Mason. Both of these guys average right around 12 points per contest. Mason, a little bit more of an outside force, a guy that's able to shoot 37% from three-point range, has really been able to put it in recently. Coming into the game yesterday, 12-plus points in three of the team's last four contests. Simmons has really been the top rebounder for this team, right around 5.5 boards per game. It's a team that does a good job of being able to play by committee. You've had Reggie Miller, no, not that Reggie Miller, another one, and Damian Daniels combined to be able to give you 5.5 assists per game. Both of these guys combined to be able to give you 4 steals per contest as well. It's absolutely amazing the sort of depth that you wind up getting with Abilene Christian. And just on a tight turnaround, having to go up against an Abilene Christian team that plays the pressing style and just the all-out defense that they do, I think that's really just going to take a lot out of Middle Tennessee. So this is a spot in which I do take a look at Abilene Christian. I do think that they get an advantage just because of the way that they wind up playing and how tough it is to be able to prepare for that. So I do wind up saying Abilene Christian as a 2.5-point favorite. Abilene Christian, a top 50 team with regards to possessions per game, and a team that they do allow right around 15 to 16 points more per 100 possessions in a road and neutral court environment. And let's call it what it is, the CBI has not featured a lot of defense anyway. So it's a spot in which I wanted to say the total at 146.5 and made Abilene Christian a 2.5-point favorite. Now we hit the final game on the board. This is 867-868 on the betting board. You've got Southern Utah hitting the road faceoff against UTEP. UTEP is a 4-4.9-point favorite. Total is 143, and this is a spot in which I did wind up setting Southern Utah as a 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take them on the money line. Southern Utah doesn't necessarily do one thing great, but they're relatively solid across the board. And then got a UTEP team that I think that they're going to get a little bit bludgeoned on glass. This is a team that out of 358 D1 teams, they are in the bottom 35 with regards to rebound rate. You've got one guy that's able to average more than 5 rebounds per game, and he was out for nearly half the season in Keandre Kennedy, guy that's able to give you 14 points, 6 boards per game. Now, Salihu Boam, Jamal Bienemy, these guys have been solid. They're able to give you a combined 34.5 points per contest, 8 rebounds. Bienemy, 4 assists and a steal and a half per contest. Boam, 3 assists, 1.8 steals per game, and both of these guys shoot right around 85% of the free throw line. UTEP as a whole, they do shoot 76% at the charity stripe. You take a look at this Southern Utah team, and what I like about them is that they're going to be able to win the battle down low with Mason Fawcett, being able to give you 8 rebounds, 12 points per contest, guy that shoots in the low to mid-30s from three-point range. You've also got Tavion Jones, a guy that is most likely going to be out of the fold in this game. You take a look at the last time they wound up hitting the floor against Kent State, he was out, a guy that's able to give you 14.5 points per contest. That does need to be factored in, but you are going to have Mr. John Knight III, a guy that has been able to give you at least 13 points in each of the last 4 contests, 4-plus assists in 4 of the last 5 games. Just an ultimate stat sheet stuffer for this team, shooting 37% from 3-point range. And then got a couple ancillary pieces in Ian Moody along with Jason Spurgeon, who have been able to shoot it very well from 3-point range. Both of these guys shoot in the high 30s from 3-point range. They combine to be able to give you 17 points per contest, with Moody, he actually shoots more like 42% from 3-point range. And it's a Southern Utah team that they've been able to do a relatively solid job on the road all season long. You take a look at this UTEP team, and with regards to opponent three-point shooting percentage, they've been able to do a more solid job recently, right around 120th in all of college basketball. It's a Southern Utah team that they can be a little bit hit or miss with this regard, more around 200th in the country, but they actually allow opponents to shoot 36.5% from three-point range in their home games, 31.6% on the road. This has been a defense of Southern Utah that has actually been better on the road. They're a team that they play a little bit more up-tempo. They rank in the top 65 with regards to possessions per game. UTEP is outside the top 200, so you've got a battle of styles here. But Southern Utah, a team that they actually wind up giving up just like 2.5 points more per 100 possessions basis in a road and neutral court environment rather than at home, I think that they are going to be up for this challenge. Meanwhile, you've got a UTEP team that at home, they play relatively the same amount of defense as they do on the road. UTEP is trying to do a better job of being able to generate swipes with Southern Utah. They've been able to do a little bit of a better job of being able to take care of the ball. 12.5 turnovers per contest. It doesn't necessarily sound great, but you take a look at what they've been able to do down the stretch, and they've been turning the ball over more like 11.5 times per contest in the last, I would say, month or so. So I do think that Southern Utah being able to take care of the ball going to be big in this spot. Southern Utah has been relatively consistent with their offense all season long. A team that has been able to get to at least 79 points in 3 of their last 4 games is solid. And then you've got a UTEP team that, to their credit, they have really been playing some great defense. This is a bunch that has allowed 68 points or fewer in each of their last 6 games, but I do think that Southern Utah going to be able to speed them up. And in the basketball class, Classic is really where defense has went to die in this tournament. Set my total at 145.5. I'm looking over. I think that Southern Utah goes on the road and they get the job done, set them as a 1-point favorite. So I'm going to be willing to take them on the money line. And that'll wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. A big thanks to Ben Wilson over there at VSiN, and just an absolutely tremendous play-by-play voice as well. He joined me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letter ZM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, and that means I'm going to be coming at you guys once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.